Aristotle's treatment of friendship in Book 8 and 9 of the Nicomachean Ethics, from which we will consider primarily Book 8, which deals with his principal ideas of friendship, Book 9 being concerned with the political and socio-political dynamic of relationships of trust in the formation of a state or a society, there's no question but that this text is one of the most influential in the development of Christian ideas about and treatises on friendship throughout the tradition. This is true both in a direct sense, because Aristotle's treatises were translated into Latin and made available in the West in the Middle Ages, along with a variety of other Eastern, this is a Greek texts, and of course were very influential in the development of scholasticism. But it's even true that before that, they were influential insofar as Aristotle's treatise is itself the basis of Cicero's De Amicitia, which we will consider shortly, and it also transmitted to the Western world a tremendous treasure trove of information on friendship, primarily that which was discussed here by Aristotle and, to a lesser extent, material by Plato, which we'll look at the very end of this lecture and very briefly. Aristotle's treatise, it should be remembered, is coming out of a context in which Aristotle is himself quite a successful practitioner of rhetoric and philosophy, a student of Plato. He himself was the founder of the Lyceum, Academy of Philosophy that became known as the Peripatetics, taken from his habit of walking up and down in the peristyle as a way of teaching. And he himself was very influential in that he was called to the court of Philip of Macedon and became the tutor, of course, of Alexander the Great. So his influence on politics, his sense of being taken seriously, was very, very positive and contrasted significantly with the rather more depressed worldview that one might find, for example, in Cicero, whose republic is literally falling to pieces around him. Aristotle has a very positive view, and for him, the notion of friendship, as we see at the beginning of Book 8, is in the context of a discussion of virtue, arete. In fact, the Nicomachean Ethics is a treatise on virtue, on the different virtues, and we need to bear in mind that for Aristotle, a virtue is a fixed habit or disposition of mind and of behavior that is acquired through repetitive action, putting into action both the action of thought and of behavior, which creates a firm habit within the self, a hexis in the Greek sense. And it is also a balance. A virtue for him, an arete, is also a balance between the vices of deficiency and excess. Now, it's very interesting that according to that understanding, friendship should be regarded as a virtue, as he says right here at the very beginning, is a virtue or, and he has to qualify that, implies virtue, because it's a little harder to describe how friendship is a virtue in the sense of being a balance between excess and deficiency, but certainly one can describe it as a way of behaving or as an experience that one chooses to validate, engage in, and regard as important, because, as he puts it, without friends, no one would choose to live, though he had all other goods. So friendship for him is one of the fundamental values that gives joy to life. An underlying theme in the Nicomachean Ethics is eudaimonia, the not just happiness or a sense of joy, although it certainly implies that, but quite literally that term would be translated as, in a Christian context, as having a good guardian angel. One might say being aware of that joy which is more than just superficial, an awareness of a well-being and of a going towards a good goal and end. That's implied in eudaimonia as well, and that's the goal of virtue, and it is also, as we shall see, a context of friendship in its truest and highest form. It's been argued that the Nicomachean Ethics is not well put together, that it perhaps represents a later, less than completely competent re-editing of Aristotle's thought, and we will see a certain jumping around of thought, but our goal here is to notice the principal ideas about friendship which Aristotle describes, because these will recur in adapted form in Cicero and then in the Christian sources that we will be studying. Let's drop down now. And although there are chapter numbers given in this book 8, the chapter numbers are artificial and are not actually official. Generally speaking, in Aristotle's studies, the numbers that are given are the Becker citations, which are in blue and which are in small numbers, and begin with, in the very first section of book 8, 1155a. So I may have to refer to those as well as to the artificial chapter divisions as we move through this. But let's drop down now several paragraphs into number 3, which I've given a blue bar, which represents my own commentary on it, the three bases of friendship: utility, pleasure, and virtue. Aristotle describes, and then everyone after him takes up and either repeats or modifies slightly, the notion that there are at least three different kinds of friendship, or philia, the Greek word for friendship. The one that is based, he describes here in 3a, as based on utility, on that which is krazimon, that which is useful, or utilitas in the Latin. Those who love each other for utility do not love each other for themselves. Now, by utility, he means that the two have a common goal or a common purpose. And since, he says, as we'll see, that goal may change or that purpose may change, this kind of friendship or relationship is not permanent. And it is not based on the good of the other. It's not based on loving or appreciating the other for their own sake. It's based on some common goal that both have agreed upon. And then he points down, if you drop down to the next paragraph, that the useful is not permanent, and thus this is a relationship that is always changing. In 3b, the next section down that is highlighted, here he describes the second kind of friendship, friendship based on hedone, on pleasure. The friendship, he says, of young people seems to aim at pleasure. And it would be a friendship that involves things that feel really good, whether it's a delight in the physical attractiveness of the other, or one might describe it as a kind of relationship of utility if it's something primarily based on physical attractiveness or lust or sexuality, but just enjoying that which is pleasurable, not specifically defined as a common goal, but kind of having a pleasant time under, he says, the guidance of emotion. He says, these people do wish to spend their days and lives together. It is thus they attend the purpose of their friendship. But he points out that this also alters quite a lot and is therefore not going to be a permanent state. But perfect friendship, teleia philia, he says, is the friendship of those who are good and alike in virtue. So perfect friendship, the highest, the best form of friendship, is based, he says, on virtue. Those who wish well to their friends for their sake and are most truly friends. They do this by reason of their own nature, and therefore their friendship lasts as long as they are good, and goodness is an enduring thing. This friendship is based not on a common goal, not simply on an experience of pleasure, but on the goodness which the other possesses, which one also prizes. I see the good in you, the virtue in you. I delight in that. I have it also as a common goal. You see that in me. And so the basis of our relationship is this good that we mutually see. And so, as we'll see, it becomes reinforcing. I can support that good in you. You can support that in me. And it becomes, obviously, a source of delight. It becomes a kind of a common goal in the sense that we both want one another to excel in that goodness which we see. And as Aristotle says, since the state, and this is based on a hexis, that is to say a love of virtue, that stable state of goodness that one is seeking to achieve, since that is permanent or is trying to be permanent, then the relationship may well be permanent as well. But, he says, if you drop down to the next paragraph, to the highlighted text, it is natural that such friendships should be infrequent, for such persons are rare. To find people who bear that beauty, that goodness of soul, that goodness of character or quality, which one can rejoice in and want to encourage and delight in and be delighted in for the same reason. Such friendship, he also says, and this is a point that will be taken up throughout the tradition, requires time and familiarity. And as we'll see, in his tradition, friendship often means living with someone in some kind of community. community, a small community, or even in a common dwelling, because there is an ongoing daily reinforcement of this good. And this is a characteristic of the later peripatetic followers of Aristotle. They keep in touch with one another via letters or in some other way. You have to maintain the relationship, both to develop the familiarity and also to keep alive this sense of the common good in the other, which is the source of the relationship. If we drop down now to number 4 and to the about the third paragraph that is highlighted in white, he reasserts that for the sake of pleasure or utility, even bad men may be friends of one another, or good people of bad, or one who is neither good nor bad. So the other kinds of friendship that he's regarding as lower forms based on utility or pleasure can be entered into even by those who are evil. Two who are wicked may have a common evil goal, and so there's a kind of a dark friendship that can result in a destructive behavior and a reinforcing of that. But he says, but for their own sake, only good people can be friends. That is to say, you can really only want the good of the other, delight in the good of the other in the context of what he describes as the highest and the best form of friendship. I want that good in you. That is my desire in our relationship, and that is your desire for me. That's the basis for true friendship that can't be engaged in for the sake of wickedness. And so he says, it's among, and this is in the yellow highlighted text, it is among the good, the trust, and the feeling that he would never wrong me, and all the other things that are demanded in true friendship are found. If you drop down then to number 5, there's a blue bar ahead of it. Communal life is a characteristic of friendship. Again, this is characteristic of his school of philosophy and his understanding, and one can see it to some extent in the Christian context, both in some monastic theories of friendship, but especially in St. Augustine's idea of the living out of the kind of retreat life, which he did in Cassiciacum, and then later which he tried to create with his own clergy. Those who live together delight in each other and confer benefits on one another. So there is a growth in friendship that requires familiarity and regular presence to one another. And he says, if you drop down a little further, there is nothing so characteristic of friends as living together. And he repeats now, and we'll see that this same idea is repeated again toward the end of the portion of the Nicomachean Ethics we'll be looking at in chapter 9. Aristotle then goes back again to what he's said before. The truest friendship is that of the good. Philia heton agathon, of that which is good and which we acknowledge is good with one another. It looks as if loving or to love, philesis, a word closely related to philia, which is the word for friendship, it looks as if loving, he says, is a feeling, a pathos. But friendship, philia, is a state of character, a hexis. And here's one of the reasons he can call it a virtue. It is something that one commits oneself to and becomes a part of the pattern of one's life. Love may be felt, he says, as much toward lifeless things, but mutual love involves choice. It involves proiresis, and choice springs from a hexis, a state of character. And those who wish well to those whom they love for their sake, not as a result of feeling, but as a result of a state of character, these are those who are engaging in friendship. So some very beautiful definitions: loving the other for the sake of the other, the good that is in the other, the good that you desire for and want to facilitate in the other, and that it's reciprocal. The good man becoming a friend becomes a good to his friend. Each then both loves what is good for himself. They love in the other what is also good for themselves. And if we drop down now, past the whole of number 6 to number 7, he talks about, and we won't look at it in any detail, the idea of friendships between those who are not equals, those who are not social equals, between ruler and subject, between, and unfortunately, husband and wife, and that just reflects something of the society in which he lived. And finally, what is of interest to us, and I've highlighted it, when one party is removed to a great distance, the possibility of friendship ceases. If one friend is raised too high, real friendship may become difficult or impossible. And he points out that that's the case with God. So with Aristotle, the idea of friendship with God is not a primary metaphor, a primary way of teaching, but it will become, obviously, a way of teaching in light of Christ's own invitation, I do not call you servants, but friends, and the idea of friendship with God will become a very Christian idea. For Aristotle, that's difficult because, of course, the notion of the distance of the gods. And it's important to note that contrast. If you drop down now to the bottom of number 8, there's a yellow highlighted text. Loving seems to be the characteristic virtue of friends, so that it is only those in whom this is found in due measure that are lasting friends, and only their friendship that endures. So there is a characteristic of loving, of really wanting the good for the other. And then he repeats in number 9 this idea that we've already seen. And this is his beginning of the section we're not going to look at in much detail, and which continues on into book 9, his idea of the communal dimension, then the social and political dimensions of friendships, or relationships in which there are mutually adhered to goals. But he says again here in number 9 something we've already seen, the proverb, what friends have is common property, koina ta philon. Friends have things, keep things in common. Everything that I have is also the property of my friend. He says this expresses the truth. For friendship, he says, and this is fascinating, depends on community. And koinonia gar hephilia. So there is an emphasis on the same word that will be used later by St. Paul to describe the Christian community, which here, for Aristotle, is a precondition of friendship. Friendship presupposes the existence of a koinonia. We'll, again, not go into detail in the sections that follow after this, that have more to do with the social and sociopolitical aspects of friendship, which, as I mentioned, are continued in Book 9. But what I would like you to do is to drop down to the very bottom of the page to the red-bordered highlighted text that says Plato Lysis on Friendship. Aristotle's teacher, Plato, had discussed the question of friendship in a variety of contexts, but these discussions have to be teased out of dialogues, which are often on other subjects. The Symposium, for example, to some extent the Phaedrus. And here the Lysis, which is often described as being the treatise on friendship, does raise the question, but it's a very enigmatic dialogue, because the conclusions are tentative, and it almost seems as if Plato is being very playful with the subject. And it's been said that for Plato, the ideal philosopher, the ideal possessor of wisdom, would not be in need of friendship, would not be in need of friends, because the friendship relationship is propaedeutic, that is, it has a teaching quality. It is for the purpose of making you into a more perfect individual by being reinforced in virtue, and so that serves a purpose until one reaches a quality of perfection, but that ultimately one, in a sense, wouldn't need friendship. It's been said that that's what Plato would have concluded, although that's debatable, and it's very hard to find that specifically described. Certainly, for his pupil Aristotle, as we've seen, friendship remains a good throughout life, something that one would always want to have, and indeed, it is the highest good. Well, I want to just look very briefly at a text from this treatise on friendship, enigmatic and difficult, though it is for a whole variety of reasons, and just to point out that Aristotle is himself drawing on a pre-existing tradition, and there's one point which will come up again in later Christian thought in Plato that you do not find in Aristotle, which is why I'm highlighting it here. And just to say by way of background, and it's included in the tiny title, that Plato in his dialogue has repeated traditional ideas about friendship, including the idea of the value of a sincere friend, more valuable than anything else, at least for the imperfect, that like is attracted to like, there's a quality of likeness in friendship, a friend should be virtuous, and Plato plays with the idea of utility in friendship, that may be even present, he thinks, in higher forms of friendship, and it must be reciprocal. But very interestingly here, in section 219c of Lysis, he has, in this text that I've highlighted, the idea that when you consider that friendship is based on some principle that you see in the other, he says, well, then would you not say that there is a kind of proto-friendship, that there is a primordial friendship, there is an ideal of the friend which this person is representing. There is some first principle, some arche, which will not keep leading us on from one friend to another, but we will reach the primordial friend, the proton philon, for whose sake all others are called friends, and there we shall stop. That there is a kind of a perfect or primordial notion of a friend, and that's what we're seeking in our own experiences of friendship. And he says, and concludes, that the primordial friend, the proton philon, is the true friend, the alethos. Friend. Well, again, this is an idea that he doesn't develop in much detail, but one can see how compatible this will be with later Christianity, that what one sees in the other, in the goodness that one wills for the other, is actually a reflection of Christ himself, that in seeing a friend and in delighting in a friend, one is engaging in a kind of contemplative act, seeing the good in the other, which is the Christ in the other, Christ seeking to be more real in the other, and what we do is allow the other to minister to Christ in us as we minister to Christ in the other, seeking that good to which the Lord is calling us both. Well, this is an idea which can and will be applied in later Christianity, which is found in Plato, Aristotle's teacher.